Explained Show Live. This is the weekly Gundam podcast and live show where we talk about Gundam, and when there's a lack of Gundam to talk about, we talk about whatever is the fun thing of the week. Lately, it's been X-Men, so...
That's Gundam adjacent, I think.
Yeah, it is in a way. And hey, look who it is. It's Steven. We got over our beef. I know, it was like forced beef. That sounds odd,
we'll
but yeah.
Come up with something, I'm sure.
Yeah. No, but... no, glad to have you back, Steve, because although it was fun last time, like, I was trying to think, I'll do something crazy and different, and, like, I grabbed my mic, and then I was just walking around using, like, that camera I never used to track me. It was fun. Little thing.
I thought it was a great show. I was able to tune in and watch the VOD, so.
Okay, that's cool.
You held it down.
That's cool. Yeah, glad to have you back. We have a lot to talk about, but before I get into that... It's good to see everyone in chat. Hyena Mage, Ultronimus, no one is here. I love saying that for some reason. King Dylan 5000, good to see you all. Yeah, happy to get started here. So, I like this. Ultronimus saying new types are just mutants. I mean, that's really it. That's a parallel that I grabbed onto quickly when I was getting back into X-Men, and it deals with the same theme. There's this, it's like, we could talk about race or whatever, but it's just the evolution of man as a whole. What's next for mankind, and how do people react to that?
New types are just a mutation, a very groovy mutation. Hey, I happen to love James McAvoy, and like X-Men First Class, even though it was like kind of not really like X-Men, you know, I thought that movie was fantastic.
Yeah, there's something about those X-Men movies where it's like, yeah, I'm disappointed in how everything turned out, but at the same time, they're enjoyable to watch, and you're seeing the things you want to see, and they're speaking on the themes that are true to the source material. So, you know, it's just one of those things. Space Dive, good to see you in chat. No one's saying the way mutants are persecuted is definitely pretty similar to how new types are persecuted in the post-1-year war Federation. Yeah, that's that's good stuff. Oh, I love this.
Are just sentinels.
Yeah. Exactly. That's the other thing. No, Ultronimus, I was thinking this and didn't say it. I totally got Austin Powers from that, your little accent.
That's how bad my British accents are, is that they sound like Mike Myers, which, by the way, have you heard that Mike Myers is teasing the idea of an Austin Powers 4?
I've heard that before. I hope it happens.
I mean, I think it'd be fun, but, like, you know, we kind of need to let some old franchises die out and, you know.
Here's an idea, though, because you know how, like, and I don't know how true this is. This could just be me, but, like, it seems like the older Austin Powers movies wouldn't necessarily be done the same way today. Like, probably a lot of jokes they would probably not go with. And maybe this is an opportunity to do that, to see if they can push that. Because I feel like we're seeing that lately where people are kind of being able to push back into that, but without it really offending anyone, so people can just kind of have fun. I don't know.
Yeah, there was something about like the second and third Austin Powers in particular. The first one wasn't as guilty of this, but they almost had that like MTV movie thing about them. Because do you remember when MTV movies were a thing where it was like the entire point of the movie was to push like the five or six songs that they were trying to get to make hits on the radio?
Yeah.
But, you know, the culture has changed so much. Like, people are actually listening to music more on YouTube and Spotify than they are like buying albums and like going to shows. So it's like the idea of putting famous music artists in movies in order to get the traction, I don't think that works anymore, does it? I mean,
so although it's weird because I feel like it still works in like Japan, right
which, yeah, you know, hey, we're probably going to talk about that because that's obviously a thing related to Gundam in particular.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
There's so many Gundam powered pop stars.
Yeah,
shoot, what, at Coachella they had the Witch from Mercury theme song playing. Like,
I didn't know that. That's,
yeah, I can't believe we didn't talk about this you know, last week, 2 weeks ago. Is it's like, you know, they had the artist that did the Witch from Mercury theme was at Coachella and performed, and she did the Witch from Mercury theme, and And it's crazy to me because it's like, how many people in that audience do you think really actually are Gundam fans that were like, hey, I know who that Japanese pop artist is? Like,
that's a good point, because then I wonder how many in there know Witch for Mercury, but not necessarily Gundam. You know what I mean? Like, I wonder if maybe that's a thing.
How many degrees of separation?
Well, because it reminds me of my own ignorance when I got into Rise from the Ashes on Dreamcast. I just called it Side Story Rise from the Ashes. Gundam, I didn't even like bother saying that. I didn't even look up if there was source material. I was just like, dude, this side story game is awesome.
Side story to what? It's such a
I know. Yeah, exactly. That's the craziest thing, how my brain works with that. And then, yeah, we're going to, today, some of the topics we're going to cover are going to be, like, I found this this thing about, like, the best, 10 best mecha anime franchises, and the reason I want to talk about that is I'm just reminded recently when I'm looking at Gundam news, like, how it's sort of a sparse Gundam time. I think that's kind of unfair, because, yeah, we have the Seed movie, but there's not, like, anything ongoing. And so sometimes, like, okay, what are some of the things we can watch? Because really, it's just been X-Men. But, you know, more mecha-animated or mecha-like. And then we'll talk about some Gunpla coming out this month. And the voice actors of Seed Freedom, which they announced, and I'm going to be seeing that dub. And, yeah, we'll see if you guys recognize these voice actors. I don't know if I do.
So you're going with the dub version, not the sub version.
Yep.
I think that that's the right call, especially because with it being a limited, like, Fathom-style event, you know, you're not going to have time to go back and rewatch it kind of over and over. So it's one of those things where it's like, oh, I want to make sure that I get everything in the first viewing, which might be my only viewing.
That's exactly my reasoning. Cause I know when I do watch anime that's only subbed lately, I've come to realize I hate it because I'm really just looking at the words and I want to look up at the action. So yeah, for me to see Seed Freedom is more for the action, for the animation. I'm really interested in seeing that artistry of, you know, of modern Gundam animated. And so, and that's the thing, like, after this, you're right, like, I don't know when then it's going to be on Crunchyroll, which I kind of think it might be sooner than later, just because this is Seed.
Gotta be, right?
Yeah. To take a step back, your show yesterday, great. So if anyone missed that, tune in. It's just, again, where I feel like on Steven's show, if we don't get technical into a hobby, we tend to get philosophical about how we enjoy our hobbies, and it teaches me a lot.
Honestly, it was a great exercise in kind of sharing, you know, just a lot about our lives and how to live them. I appreciate those types of streams, and I know they're not for everybody. It's kind of an acquired taste, but I think that, you know, especially for guys like us that are a little older probably than most of the audience, then it's good to take time to kind of appreciate what you have and
share those things along the way that we've learned that's helped us.
Yeah, exactly.
With appreciating how we navigate. So
thank you for indulging me on that.
No, I love that stuff. I mean, that's stuff I think about, and sometimes when we're chatting off stream, we chat about this stuff. Like it's very interesting stuff. Yeah, and so other than that, anything Gundam-related you happen to get into this week? I know you have a surprise coming up, but I'm not saying anything yet until you do.
Yeah, no, that's okay. I am going to try and release a video tomorrow, and as well, you know, I want to have like both a full-length video and a short, so we'll see if I can do that kind of editing tonight. But we've got a little painted, 3D-printed Camille's mom in a capsule.
So dark, yet so accurate.
You know, it's the inspiration for it was kind of funny, and so I'm hoping that you guys are going to get a laugh out of the video, because it's kind of like, it's so out of left field, and the entire time I was thinking of that Jack Nicholson meme, the like, yes, do it.
Now you need to, I don't know how easy this would be. Well, yeah, I'm curious. So is then his mom in there, or like, is it detailed to any degree, or is it more of a silhouette?
I do have her painted, you know, as far as like her hair is good, she's got her hands, her legs, her pantsuit, I guess, is what she's wearing, kind of like formal wear. And then I do have actually a second version that I haven't finished yet, where I'm going to crack the glass and kind of, you know, make it a little more a little more tragic.
Again, yeah, dark but pivotal in storytelling. So would you make his dad then?
That would be an interesting one. So, like, how would we do that? Would we, we'd have to make it in, like, a Rick Diaz cockpit, right?
Yeah. Or I wonder, yeah, if it's... Because if you have it at that scale, you could have it where... Yeah, but I guess to show it off in a diorama, I wonder if it would be neat to do it where you cut the Rick Diaz in half. And you can almost have him in there and then make, like, an actual speech bubble of him talking to Camille. I don't know.
Talking about Margarita.
Oh, yeah. Having the visions.
I was going to say, this 3D model is actually available on my Patreon right now. So, the $5 and up patrons can download this 3D model and print it themselves. So, wow, slight plug there.
Okay, so video?
Oh, video?
What about it?
Well, the video is gonna drop tomorrow, but the actual files, the STLs to 3D print this are
no. That's
are
what I meant because now. I guess that's very helpful because if someone's going to 3D print it using your video, they could probably get a good idea on how to
paint it and up and
That is a neat idea. I hope someone does that and sends post some work on it. That would be kind of cool to see that out there more.
Yeah, you know, I might do that. Like, I might start encouraging people who are patrons over on my page to start submitting their prints, and like, you know, we'll feature it on the live show and be like, hey, look, here's what each person has kind of done with the files. Because, you know, I might be a decent designer. I am a terrible painter. And in fact, I actually broke my airbrush painting this mini. So,
you know how to hold it?
Yeah. So it's super clogged now and it backflows and all this stuff. So, you know, RIP my paintbrush, I guess. But hey, I'm just here to make the models. You guys can do the fun stuff.
No, that's cool. Yeah. It's super awesome. So yeah, if you haven't checked out the Patreon links for his channel, so you can check that out, especially if you're into that stuff. Other things to talk about really before we get into the topics. Gundam things I've been into this week, not much really, just because I haven't...
Posing them. You've been posing the Gundams.
That's true. That's true. So yeah, I did have my video that went out about like how to pose, you know, Gunpla action figures. There's crossover there, and sometimes it's fun to pose a robot like a human. And they're really basic tips because I think there's, you know, and this is not like calling out anyone, but I see a lot of pictures of people posting their stuff, and it's like, oh, if they just tweak that a little bit, tweak that, you know. So hopefully this video is kind of like a guide for just the simple stuff. And
yeah, what do you think, guys? I just finished my Mark II. Does it look good?
it's one of those things. And when I was first doing it, there were little details that I wouldn't notice. One of the main ones, when I look at my old photos, something I brought up in the video, but like the shoulder armor might like be sticking up or uneven. It's like, oh, I didn't think about that when I was taking the picture.
There's always little minor things like that. And there are some really good people both on the Gundam Explained Discord and mine where it's like, oh, I think what's like 16 and second is really good at, I think he like recreated some of like the anime poses with his most recent build, which was really cool.
Yeah. And a whole video on that too, that went out Monday, doing an interview with him. And if you want to see all of this other stuff, just check out the Discord. And that's actually honestly how I learned about his work, from him posting there. So
yeah,
people got pictures to post him. But the other thing, so what was cool again, like I feel like there's some crossover with your video yesterday, because we were talking about like when we hit walls, and it could be just work we're doing or something we're enjoying. And you know, for me, my wall lately has been, what's new, interesting? Like, I can review action figures or Gundam figures and look up old lore, but it's like sometimes I want some new news or something new to talk about until I see Seed Freedom. So luckily, X-Men has been taking up a lot of my time. And, you know, something we were just talking about earlier, how, there's a lot of crossover where I've realized, getting back into X-Men, the things I like about it and how similar it is to Gundam.
Yeah.
And so another thing that then I got into was actually reading and comprehending the comics, because I read some of the Jim Lee stuff when I was a kid, but, you know, I don't think I really fully, you know, embraced it. Or I guess to understand it, and maybe I could have, because I wasn't much for reading books when I was a kid, and I think that was, again, me not embracing, hey, I should just fully commit to reading a book.
Yeah.
So it's interesting reading the comics, because the those Jim Lee comics in the 90s are very similar to the modern X-Men show, because it's all very monologue-y, where it's panels and panels of the grand plan, of the philosophy. And I've noticed with the new X-Men cartoon is the first part of the show is really just that, are the philosophies, and they're talking about things that make sense, and then it gets into the action. Watching the old ones with my son, he seems to prefer the old ones. But I notice, even though the subject matter is the same, they really just jump into action quicker. So I get it. And so I wonder, like, what is it with me where, like, I am reading, the Jim Lee X-Men stuff, and I'm like, okay, Magneto, I get it. You know, it's, and...
Well, what's the famous quote is, brevity is the essence of wit, you know, like... There's a talent, I think, that most writers probably never achieve, where they get a little too wordsmithy. And that's one of the things, like, I've always loved about Hemingway. You know, it was always, like, cold, curt, quick sentences. The minimal amount of information that you need in order to process what's going on in the story, versus these kind of long, flowery explanations of these nuanced ideas. Sometimes, you know, that can be helpful, but I think that in most cases, people are capable of reading between the lines. And I always go back to the Hemingway story, Hills Like White Elephants, because the actual plot of the story is never outlined. Like, Hemingway doesn't ever say what's happening in the story. It's just a dialogue between a man and a woman. But through the conversation, it's like, wait a second, there's something going on here that I'm not picking up on. And
it's like it's building the world. And okay, so that brings up something else, because I, as much as I am enjoying reading these X-Men comics, for me it's interesting to see what was going on and how hard sci-fi and badass a real movie could be. Like, now that I've read that Jim Lee stuff, like the fact that you have, like, flying in space to, like, the asteroid, Magneto's asteroid, like, that's badass stuff.
That's really cool.
Yeah, and, what was my point I was going to make? I totally forgot.
Oh, sorry.
I keep talking.
I derailed you.
No, you didn't derail me. I derailed myself by getting so enamored by this asteroid. Anyway, so, and it's kind of in line with what King Dillon is saying. You should check out the 90s Spider-Man cartoon. So, I really liked that Spider-Man cartoon when I watched it in the 90s. Back, you know, Batman animated, X-Men animated. Though I haven't watched the Spider-Man cartoon recently, and I wonder if anyone else has, and does it still, like, it? Because I never associated it having a dark theme like X-Men. Even when I was a kid, like, I knew, like, the Spider-Man was a little more, like...
I guess it's not as overtly referential to what I would consider, like, contemporary social conflicts, right?
Yeah.
But I think that it is still relevant. You know, it does still have that slightly more adult tone. And you know, also mentioned Ultimate X-Men. The Ultimates series was kind of an interesting one in the early 2000s, and there are actually wholesale lines from the Ultimates comics, the Marvel Ultimate line, that were put into the live action movies. So in, like, the second Fantastic Four movie with Chris Evans, like the Silver Surfer one, they actually took a line straight out of the Ultimate Galactus comic books, and it's that one where Reed Richards is kind of monologuing to one of the army generals or whatever. And, you know, he goes off on this tangent, like, you know, because the general says, oh, well, you know, well, I was the quarterback of my football team. What were you doing in high school? And he's like, you know what? You're right. I was the nerdy kid in high school. I didn't, you know, I wasn't very cool, But now, fast forward 35 years later, and I'm married to the hottest woman on the planet, and I'm a super scientist with superhero powers. And by the way, the quarterback in high school is asking for my help on how to deal with Silver Surfer. And it's like, that was cool in a comic book, but in real life, portrayed in live action, it sounds so just forced. And
I get what you're saying. Reading and digesting a concept versus seeing it expressed comes across differently.
Yeah. And that's where I think you've mentioned this, where it's like, and we talked about this with Kyle, where it's like the editor's rooms are just vacant when it comes to like comic books, and they just kind of let writers run wild with their egos. And so that's where that kind of monologue-y, you know, stiff dialogue comes from, is it's, you don't have somebody in there to say like, hey, if someone was talking to me like this, I'd slap them in the face. I wouldn't let them finish their sentence.
No, that's right. That's what it sounds like when I am reading, yeah, the X-Men. And again, it's not a major complaint, but actually I remember what I was going to talk about, because that juxtaposed with when I'm reading Gundam Origin, for instance, knowing that is a translation, yeah, that is actually a more enjoyable read for me. Because what's happening is, and I think it's maybe personal preference, because as the story unfolds in Origin, it's all world building. Like they're talking about things in the world, in the structure of the X-Men comics do it too, but it's more of the characters, you know, again, having their little monologues. Because yeah, in Gundam, they talk about like the machinery. Yeah, that's, I guess, a good difference. If you get into the details of X-Men, it's more about mutant stuff, right?
Yeah.
Or maybe the politics. But in Gundam, you really get into like the science fiction of machinery. How would we describe this if it could be real in the future? And even, like, if you think about it, a new type, the aspect of a new type probably seems more realistic than what we see from mutants. You know, some mutants, maybe that's realistic, but some that like goes all far out, you know?
Yeah, they definitely got crazy with the idea of mutants in the 90s. And I think what a lot of people fail to appreciate about Gundam, not anybody in this audience, of course, because we are the enlightened and the... No. So in Gundam, the idea of the new type and the value that they represent is kind of nuanced because of like the, you know, the Minkowski particles in Universal Century that prevent long-term wireless communication, the things that we take for granted in our current year, these are things that are overcome by new types. You know, the ability to, you know, target an ICBM becomes available again through the use of new types and psycho waves and psycho frames. So it's like all of that sci-fi, you know, sort of mumbo jumbo that people are like, oh, it's space wizards. It's like, yes, it's space wizards, but not in like the Star Wars sense where it's like, oh, well, you know, we just feel things. There's a utility there that I think is underappreciated. And the reason that new types and cyber new types become a thing is because there are technological limitations placed by the world building in the universe that make it so that like, oh, we need to use these people because these people overcome something that we can't.
What's that? That makes a lot of sense if I'm thinking about, you know, how, yeah, the story unfolds in Gundam with the technology. It's funny because it's almost like that is the battle, human technology versus evolution of the humans. Even though that's not front and center, it kind of is. Whereas, you know, in X-Men's a little different because it's almost like it doesn't matter how the technology is showcased in X-Men, because really we're trying to talk about the themes, the modern themes.
Right. We're talking about like the social as opposed to like the, yeah. And I think that it's interesting because the evolution of humanity as portrayed in Gundam is very directed. Like, I think even at the point of in Char's Counterattack, Quest mentions like, oh, you know, people, or no, it's Hathaway. Hathaway is the one that says, oh, people evolved so that they could remember each other when they're traveling out in space. Whereas the evolutions that are going on in X-Men are very randomized. Like, you know, is it going to make sense for you to, you know, grow tusks out of your face? No, probably not. It's just a random mutation. Whereas the mutations that are happening in Gundam are very relevant to what is needed for humanity at that time.
Yeah, think it would be cool to shout out to Simply Newtype in the chat, get Kyle to do kind of like a three-way discussion on like themes we see throughout like specifically X-Men and Gundam. Because, you know, something else I learned recently by getting back into X-Men, I think Kyle brought it up and you did too, like the number one, that X-Men number one in 1991 was like the highest selling comic of all time.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Like, I didn't know that when I was getting into it. But maybe because of it being so popular is how I discovered it. You know, and it is kind of crazy that that was the, that story is what became the most popular comic story of all time. Is that true, really?
I mean, the X-Men in particular, I think, resonate with a lot of people, especially because, especially comic book fans, right? Because all of us kind of feel like outcasts in one way or another. Maybe it's your race, maybe it's your gender, maybe there are so many different ways that you can feel like an outcast. And the idea of mutants is that they represent that manifestation of being an outcast. And we all kind of long for that nurturing, welcome environment. And some people find it in a healthy way with like a Charles Xavier type. And some people find it in a not so healthy way, like with the Brotherhood of Mutants Magneto type, where they give in to sort of their anger, which kind of goes in hand with like, you know, Jedi versus Sith, right? Like if you're a force sensitive person, maybe you're not necessarily in tune with everybody else. There's something different about you. And so it's like, do you identify more with, stoicism and, you know, kind of taking it on the chin, or do you identify with justice and kind of vengeance for what is wrong with you? It's a message that resonates with more people than I think, like Captain America. Like, I was a super soldier and I'm gonna be a super soldier for America. Like
that, yeah, it's interesting how sometimes I feel like there's these things that we do connect with, and as much as corporations feel like they have that, they do have that recipe maybe to a point, more of a surface level. But I think there is some deeper connections that would probably benefit a corporation to try to connect to humans with that might, you know, I don't know. It's very interesting because I was even reading something that for like, yeah, the X-Men later on, they decided from early on where they had the same uniforms, it was like, well, we want the whole point of the X-Men is about being yourself, not having to worry about it. So then they morphed it into the suits kind of being their own style, their own thing. And so that's interesting because when I was younger, one thing about the X-Men was sometimes like, man, their suits aren't always matching. They could match better, you know, but now understanding that kind of deeper idea of what led them to that, I really appreciate because I think
we tried to go back that direction, like in the 2000s when Grant Morrison did like the new X-Men stuff and everybody was just in like the black leather with the yellow piping.
Yeah.
And it was like, it's cool, but it's not something missing there. Personality.
And I think this idea of what they're speaking on by, it reminds me of our issue with community, where we like the idea of community, but we see where it can be bad. And it's almost like we want to balance our communities to not go into that direction. So it's almost like we're the X-Men, right? I don't know.
You might be the X-Men. I might be, I don't know, the Morlocks, Brotherhood of Mutants.
Oh, okay. Okay. But it's very interesting to think about even deeper how much X-Men is just speaking on all of humanity, you know.
And I think that everyone can kind of agree that, like, it's one of those things. I think I mentioned this before, where there's like competing values that we hold in equal esteem. Alex Hormozi has talked about this, where it's like mercy and justice. We value both, right? Like, mercy is good because you're supposed to not be punished. You're not supposed to punish people, right? But justice is good because we want to see the people who have done wrong, you know, have done wrong to them, but they're on opposite sides of a spectrum. And so that's where there's always going to be conflict. You're always going to have, you know, Charles Xavier is the mercy, Magneto is the justice. And there's always that tension there.
Yeah. And that's exactly what is even when you look at the essence of a conflict in a Gundam series that has to do with someone that has to make a wartime decision, it is that. It's like, no, we have to give serve justice, you know, and they talk about it. It's like, no, that's not the way to do it. It's interesting because in the case of Gundam, I don't think they've ever landed on one is right over another. It's almost like no matter what, there's always going to be that element there.
Yeah, there has to be, and because that's at the root of human conflict. And I find myself, so, you know, my wife and I started rewatching Band of Brothers. I don't know why, just kind of like on a whim. Great show. And like, you know, it got me thinking about like, man, this is what Gundam should be like, is like a series of, oh man, that's, can you imagine like a Gundam miniseries like that with that production quality?
In you know what? Not that this is going to do it, but it seems close. That's the one thing I like about Requiem for Vengeance. It almost seems like it's kind of going for that horror aspect. Even though Band of Brothers isn't horror, there is that, the sort of that, yeah, the darkness that comes from this. Yeah, it's...
yeah.
And with Requiem for Vengeance, too, the fact that it's on the side of the Zeon seeing the Federation that way is... I like that to be explored.
Very cool.
Okay. We're going to move on to something, and, you know, let me get to chat. This has been good chat.
Yeah, chat has been awesome. You guys are getting real in-depth.
I know. They know what we're talking about. Yeah, X-Men has always been about social commentary. It came out during the 60s when race relations was a big topic due to the civil rights movement being a forefront issue. And so that's neat. Something else I didn't know, too, how Stan Lee was like, well, let's make it where we don't have to give a reason why they have powers. They're just born that way. And then that just goes, okay, what else can we eat? Because you're getting to the essence of being a human when you talk about being born that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, and speaking of being born that way, voice actors. Does that make sense? I don't know. That was a segue.
It was a good segue. I appreciate it.
Okay. All right, so we got the English voice cast announcement for... the dub that's coming out for Seed Freedom, which I'm happy, can't wait. I'm going on the 8th. Already got my tickets.
Sweet.
So I wanted to cover the different voice actors, actresses, see if anyone in chat knows who any of these people are. So Kira is a big deal, main character. People worship him, like Jesus. Max Middleman. Do we know who that person is, Steven?
I'm not familiar with him, but I'm not very good at like voice actor names. I'm not and you know, that's kind of like an interesting part of the culture too, right? Like, so, you know, you have parts of Gundam fans that are into Gunpla, parts of Gundam fans that are into video games. You know, some of the names here, I guess, are recognizable to some people, but you know, I know that there are some people in the chat here that it's like, oh, I know their whole filmography. Like,
yeah, no one is saying Chris Hackney. Let me actually. It's a big name at the moment.
It's funny when you say like no one's saying Chris Hackney.
I know. I love Ultra having that name. That seems like a George Costanza thing to do.
It is a very Costanzism.
I guess that's, you know, if some of you listening don't know, he does a great George Costanza in GBO2. That almost seems like that needs to be a series. Let's see. Yeah, so someone else mentioned this Amma Lee, and what first I thought when I was looking at the name out of all these is like, okay, that's like a Madonna thing. Cher?
So, or is it a typo? Like, it's her name Amma Lee, and they just forgot to put the space in between.
Oh, it could be that. That's true. But looking it up, it is a singer. So, so it's like, okay, that makes sense. So, and then sometimes I look at these names and I'm like, okay, which sounds more Gundam-like, the actual name of the character or the actor? Like, we got Zeno Robinson. What a hell of a name.
Well, and you know, you got to wonder, like, is Kelly Baskin related to Carol Baskin? You know, could her father have been eaten by a tiger?
Connection to Gundam and I forget the Tiger King. Yeah. Interesting. Let me see what else in chat no one has to say. Shirami Lee was the old Kigali voice actress, actually, yeah. Wasn't she? I know she was some Gundam dub character. I bet there's some of that going on. With the X-Men show, I was reading about some of the voice actors, like the guy that did Gambit in the original show now does Cable, but not Gambit, which
that is interesting. Well, you know, I recently watched the Lego Batman movie with my daughter, And what was interesting about that is they had Eddie Izzard playing. Eddie Izzard plays Voldemort, but Ralph Fiennes is in the movie as another character, as another villain character. And so it's like you had the actor who played Voldemort in the Harry Potter movie, but I guess contractually he was probably not allowed to play Voldemort as a Lego character in the Lego Batman movie. So like he plays someone else and Eddie Izzard plays Voldemort. It's a very convoluted.
That is bizarre. It's interesting when you see those side properties like a Lego or cartoon and who they choose to do voices. And then sometimes it's like, wait, that's better than this, or, you know, because Will Arnett does a good, like, sort of Batman in that way.
I thought Zach Galifianakis was a great Joker.
Yeah, exactly. And so maybe that's what it is sometimes. If you're not seeing the person act out the way they're expressing their voice, it might seem more believable in a cartoony manner than...
Yeah.
I think I saw a video of Cal Dodd, or even the guy that does another deep voice, where they're really contorting their faces to really pull off. Oh, yeah, the guy that does Dr. Claw in... Inspector Gadget.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is a big name. I forgot his name. I don't know if he's the Optimus Prime guy, but...
I don't think so. Yeah.
Let's see. That's the thing. Like, there's so many of those 80s things I watched of voices I heard, and I haven't really even fully learned who all those are. Let's see. Chantal Strand did a good Lacus, but they are for younger versions of the character.
Yeah. So this brings up an interesting question, because this debate happens on Discord a lot, right? Is because whenever it comes to like the dub actors and actresses, there's a, especially in Gundam, everyone talks about how great the Ocean Group is. And, you know, some people like kind of dump on some of the other voice acting teams. How do you feel about voice acting consistency? Do you feel like a character needs to be voice acted by the same person every iteration, or is there room for kind of letting other people take a stab at the character?
I feel like they should keep it consistent, because it allows the artist to kind of grow into a character and even contribute more as they're learning how to speak on that character. Yeah. But I also like the idea of then people... And I guess it depends how it's being served. Like, if anything else that's Batman animated series looking or adjacent, you would want that Kevin Conroy, you know, RIP, or the Mark Hamill Joker. Yeah. But the Mark Hamill Joker, I think, can be, and I think what Troy Baker did it, where he kind of copied that style in a way, like he did it his own, but it just sounded like it. So, and I think some of the new X-Men voice actors were talking about that. It's like they're taking the essence of what worked. But you know, I think you bring up a good point, because I think sometimes you have to do that. You have to get a new cast. But there is something to letting an artist take time to really fill in that character. I know there's series where the actors over time become producers because they're invested in that character.
Yeah, and it's always nice when you have an actor, whether it's a voice actor or a live action actor, that understands the character so well that they can speak on, like, you know, hey, what would Kigali have done in this situation? It's like, oh, well, you know, having played this character so often, I've put myself in their shoes so much that I can offer. Yeah.
So this is a good conversation real quick, and I think it's a good timely thing, because, you know, James Gunn said for the DC Universe movies, he's going to have it where the movies, live action, and the cartoon have the same voice actors. I wonder if that sets a precedent where, because, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't it where usually for new anime dubs, it's not like people get paid a whole lot and they kind of cut corners where they can?
Well, and so I guess that kind of speaks to that Netflix anime version of Scott Pilgrim, because Edgar Wright put together the same cast that did the live action Scott Pilgrim movie, and then did the animated version with that same cast, What's interesting, though, is did you watch that by any chance?
You know, I'm glad you brought it up. I haven't finished it, but I loved what I had watched because they made like a Sonic 2 and Columbo reference in like one line. And I was like, hey, that's me.
Yeah, you know, I thought it was interesting because of a lot of the lines I think were delivered so much more flat in the animated version than they were in the live action version. And I wonder how much of that is due to the fact that, like, you know, so many of those characters are like sarcastic and like, you know, kind of low energy characters in general. But then when you animate that and then you have that same energy in the booth, there's something lacking there, right? Like, we would agree that.
I completely agree. I almost feel like because they performed these live action, they're actually in a booth not really embodying. They were actually physically embodying these characters on set. Maybe they could still do that in, you know, in a booth, but I feel like it's a different environment, and I do agree with you. I agree with you 100%. A trained on-camera actor isn't always as good as a voice actor. The ones that usually are the ones that end up doing voices a lot, you know?
Yeah.
Like Chris Pratt. I don't know if this is true. I wonder if he did training to make sure that he is, because the Mario thing was like, what? No.
And he, right.
I think for the most part, he did it well. You always hear that too. I've even heard actors say voice acting is harder than real acting.
Yeah. I mean, Keanu Reeves even said, this was, you know, at a convention to a fan, but, you know, he said that his favorite character that he ever played was Duke Kaboom in the Toy Story movies. And you know, that's an actor that, like, obviously he has a lot of screen presence.
Yeah.
But, you know, even getting in the booth, I don't think, if I didn't know that that was him, I don't think I would have made that connection, because I think that he was so good and so committed to that role that, like, he was like, I'm going to embody a different character when I am doing the voice, you know?
Yeah, I wonder how much for someone like Keanu Reeves is, and here's something I don't know if a lot of people agree with. I don't think he's a good actor, but I think he's just cool. You know, like,
he's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's just like he's just cool when he's talking, so it's almost like, okay, this guy's cool anyway. And I mean, like a Bruce Campbell thing. I don't think you'd ever hear me say this again. Bruce Campbell's not the best actor. I would never say that again, but he is just so cool. So
yeah. Oh man, if Chins Could Kill book is so good.
I know.
I love that book.
I have it signed. Yeah. I met him and he signed it.
Oh, that's awesome. And I love how cool he is just about, like, you know, oh, well, in the first Spider-Man, I named Spider-Man. In the second Spider-Man.
Like, yeah, I know how he's talking about. I love all that stuff. But he's done voice acting.
I think that in a lot of anime voice acting, what you find is you have these kind of typecasty characters. You know, you have like the Chris Sabat type that all he does this really deep and gravelly voice. And like, I'm Chris Sabat. I'm also Piccolo and Vegeta. But then you have like, you know, hey, I'm cool Steve Bloom. I only do cool guy voices like Spike Spiegel from Cowboy Bebop. And it's like, you know, you're never going to catch Steve Bloom doing a goofy character because he's the cool guy voice, you know?
It's another interesting one, yeah, because it could be people just have that voice. It doesn't matter how good they are at acting it out. The voice carries that essence.
That's their whole career. Yeah. Now, there are actors that I think break that mold, like Frank Welker. You know, Frank Welker does, like, you know, he's Megatron. But he also has done some crazy I forget which Disney characters Frank Welker has done too, but I was like, are you kidding me? That's the same guy.
Yeah, he's the one I've always seen them talk about. Stuff like that. Oh, hey, and people are saying you did a great Sabat.
Well, that's not
Austin Powers. Sabat, man, you're on a roll. We got to make our own. We need to animate and voice something, you know, like, I think that would be a fun project.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, well, speaking of fun, next week we'll have the girl with a great smile on the podcast, thanks to Kyle. After, you know, talking with Kyle, he connected us because she's a cosplayer right now, a lot of X-Men stuff, which is pretty badass, but has done Gundam stuff also. So
That is so cool. I love when people kind of can keep up with trends, and it's like, okay, this is what's popular now. And with cosplay, that's extremely difficult because these costumes can sometimes take months to put together.
Some of this stuff, like if you check out her page, like just how much it's like, okay, this could be for a movie set or something, or even just like a highly produced YouTube video. Well, I guess I got to log in, but anyway, that'll be next week.
What we were talking about yesterday about, like, you know, storytelling is like, I think that cosplayers can tell stories with their bodies the way that, you know, modelers can tell stories with a diorama.
That's a good point, because when someone's custom creating that their costume, I bet there are certain facets of a costume that have more emphasis because that is something they are, like, I can see someone, you know, getting a collared, like a gambit thing. Maybe the collar's higher or lower. There could be those little things that make it unique to that individual, or the powers, okay, representing a power or a weapon or something.
I love that kind of stuff.
So yeah, this other one real quick I want to talk about, because again, I was saying how, you know, when there's like an absence of Gundam, what are some other Gundam adjacent things? So there's this article, 10 best mecha anime franchises, but curious what everyone thinks. The number 10 being Gundam, and they're saying, because, and I don't know if these are really in any order, but they're saying it's the original real robot anime franchise, so that makes sense to be on here.
Yeah, it better be.
And then 9 is Macross, which, yeah, that's, I think maybe the only other one I've really gotten into. It was the first season. I really liked it. Thoughts on Macross?
I love Macross. I was one of those people that was introduced to Robotech and then discovered Macross later. So, you know, I was kind of like, what's the, you know, but that's a great series.
Yeah. My local comic shop started getting in these newer Macross kits that look pretty sick.
Yeah.
So Evangelion, I know Ultronimus is our resident Evangelion stan. I think he has all the lore. And this is one that I've always heard of when I knew anime existed but didn't really know things. This is something I'd always heard of because it was just, I guess, that popular.
Yeah.
I guess it was the modern thing for the 90s when it came to, like, modern bass anime, I guess?
I guess so. I mean, it never appealed to me, but I guess I can understand why it's such a cultural phenomenon, right?
Yeah. I feel like someday I'm going to have to, like, sit through, because, again, I started watching, I forget what it was, a movie, the first thing, and I just... partway through it, because I was reading subtitles, I was falling asleep. I think that's what it was. Okay, I've heard of this, Gurren Lagann, or Lagann, I don't know.
Never seen it myself.
Yeah, I haven't seen it. If anyone in the chat has seen that and you have, like, thoughts on that. So originally released in 2007, it stood out due to how shamelessly old school certain elements were. Okay. They took aspects from Super Robots and played them up to the nth degree, resulting in a hot-blooded anime that never relents. Since the original series came out, Gurren Lagann has had manga and light novel adaptations. And that's the other thing about anime that makes it hard to get into, is sometimes you'll look at it and you really have no idea what the tone is. You might look at some screen and you're like, I don't know what am I, it's like you might be in a mood but not know what to watch.
There might be some tonal whiplash. Like, you know, I'm a big Full Metal Alchemist fan, and the anime style of it and some of, like, the goofy, over-the-top, campy stuff, I think, takes away from some of the more adult themes and some of the more, like, really heart-wrenching moments.
Yeah, that's the balance that sometimes, especially if something's translated, it's not necessarily... you know, I'm getting distracted because it looks like they have a lot of detail on a certain character in this. So maybe I can watch it. All right. Mazinger. I've always seen this, but never seen it. You?
So Mazinger, I would disagree with that line because to me, I think Gigantor is the most iconic super robot. But I never got into Mazinger either, so, like, you know, it has that same sort of animation flair, I think, to it, but...
You know, it's interesting. I think it got released maybe late last year, early this year. There was a video game. Maybe it's called this UFO Robot Grandize. I don't know. It looked like this. It was like open world. It looked like not necessarily low budget, but you never heard of the studio. I don't think anyone's heard of this game, but it looked cool. And I think that's one of those examples of like, how can someone get into an anime? And it's, yeah, because it's apparently an open world game where you're this giant robot.
That is a different twist on the open world, right? Like, because you usually feel so small in an open world.
Yeah, that's a good point. I should check it out. Okay, here's Gridman, which I think was really the Super Human Samurai Cyber Squad from the U.S.
Your guess is as good as mine.
Servo. I think his name was like Servo, Superhuman Samurai Cyber Squad.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, because that was something else I watched in the 90s when it was, yeah, again, them taking Japanese shows, making them and I remember I would even buy the action figures, but it didn't last long because I think it just didn't. To me, it was neat. The guy was going to the computer as a robot fighting monsters.
So, yeah, Ultronimus is saying, isn't Gridman just Ultraman? Which, like, I used to watch Ultraman as a kid. I used to have, like, an Ultraman action figure that I really liked.
Yeah, see, Ultraman's something else I haven't really got into.
I never got into Godzilla the way that a lot of people seem to. Like everyone's always talking about Godzilla to me, and I'm like, look, I know Ultraman. I don't know Godzilla.
That's an interesting thing, because I feel like I really like Godzilla, but I've never, like, been obsessed about Godzilla. Yeah, here's that Superhuman Samurai Cyber Squad.
Yeah, it's literally, same image, right?
Yeah.
Is that Jonathan Taylor Thomas?
No, it's one of those actors that had brothers. Lawrence?
Yeah.
Is that? Yeah.
Yeah, Matthew Lawrence?
Yeah. Anyway, and then, yeah, they had toys that came out were just imported, and I thought they were pretty cool. They had very little articulation, which I thought was odd, but...
Interesting choice to put that, like, on a mecha anime list, you know, when it does seem more Power Ranger-y. Yeah.
I agree with you, unless the original Gridman is more mecha than the superhero thing. Okay, Code Geass, I've heard of that, but...
Yeah, that seems to be a really popular one. Again, never really appealed to me. Did you get into it at all?
Nope, never seen it.
Yeah.
No. Full Metal Panic, I've heard good things about that.
Yeah, so have I.
And then Pat Labor?
Yeah, Pat Labor. That is pretty sweet.
Yeah, yeah, I've watched the show. I think there's a show and a movie, and is there?
Yeah.
Okay, I've seen the show, and I thought it was good. Eureka 7?
Never saw that.
Yeah. We're the worst at this, dude.
Yeah.
Why do we have this podcast?
We are so mecha... mecha illiterate. Well, you know, it's interesting because this list doesn't have like an honorable mentions, does it? Because I feel like a lot of these kind of overlook some of the
That's true. There's a lot of things I've watched that I thought
all 90s and 2000s. Where's Armored Trooper Votoms? Yeah. Where is Vifam?
That's right.
Where's Elgheim?
Okay, you just named them all. Good job.
Right.
Man, I'm sure Ollie Barter is like
because you really loved Gunbuster and
That's a really good example. Yeah, right? Gunbuster.
Like,
yep.
And then this wasn't a series, but there was like a 45-minute long movie called Madox, which
that's good.
Yeah.
I've
you
seen
saw
that
one. The mech in that reminds me of Exo Squad.
Yes. Yeah. That's a good call out there. Well, cool. So you know what? This can actually give me an idea of things maybe to watch so I can speak on it. We'll see. We're getting near the end here. So I just wanted to cover some, I guess, May Gunpla coming out. Ooh. One is the Mighty Strike Freedom Gundam, which I guess is that like upgrade that happens. It looks cool.
You gotta have, I guess it's not a mid-season upgrade. It's a mid-movie upgrade.
Yeah. The third act thing or something. Is that? Oh, it's some P Bandai. Yeah, some Witch from Mercury stuff. Yeah, stuff is being slow to load. Let's see. Engage Gundam. Hasn't that already come out before? Or is this going to be the first time?
This is the first I've heard of it.
Okay.
And honestly, you know what's interesting about that is I think that it doesn't quite... Because doesn't the Engage Gundam have, like, the yellow around the chest plates? Or am I misremembering that?
That may be a different version, like a different... Because doesn't it go through... Yeah, that's something that needs a lore video, is actually, like, going through what they're coming up with Engage, because I have not been keeping track. And then, yeah, Sword Calamity. Is this just another variant? Oh, it's a variant of the Mechanics Aerial with the permit score 4. Don't know if I'd get that. And Rising Freedom Gundam. Okay, clear version.
Are you a fan of the clear versions? I don't understand the appeal of them.
I mean, I think it looks cool.
Yeah.
But, I wouldn't see... Oh! Here is one that I had pre-ordered.
Which one's that?
The Zeta, the 0088. So that's going to be coming soon. Interesting.
Hey, I keep telling you guys, if you want a high-grade Zeta, that's the one.
Yeah. Okay, that's going to be fun to cover, because I'm going to be diving into all the little aspects of it. Okay.
Sweet.
Vargwheel.
Yeah.
Johnny Ryden's Gelgoog.
I mean, you never run out of Johnny Ryden variants, right? You just print it red. And
there's stuff in UC Engage coming out with him, so maybe it's like the synchronicity.
Yeah.
Okay, this looks cool. I think we talked about this on a previous...
Yeah, the one. Delta.
Yeah, the Delta Gundam. Yeah, another clear one. Let's see, Midnight Coding for the Freedom, the Strike Freedom. That's like kind of like the clear thing, you know?
Yeah.
Can you even see it?
Like, some of it, I guess, kind of makes sense. Like, when you think about, like, the EcoPla, like, they're all made out of recycled plastic. So it's like they would be black, because that's the only thing you can do with it. But if you're going to go out of your way to intentionally make, like, a Strike Gundam in midnight coating, I don't know.
Yeah, it's for those that, like, that's their favorite suit. You know?
Yeah.
Like, when you get the multiples of something, yeah, that's... Yeah, like I have the Gundam base Mark II I still need to build, but that has where it has slight variations to the colors.
Yeah.
Well, I think that just about does it, everyone. Thanks for joining. That was a lot of fun to just talk whatever and then see some latest Gundam releases and all that. Always fun. Always appreciative of the chat. That's always a lot of fun. So.
Yeah, you guys definitely know mecha anime better than Adam and I. Yeah. I've always said that, like, we're not anime fans, we're just Gundam fans.
Yeah, it's funny how that works. So, yeah, thanks for everyone that joined. Yeah, feel free always to email GundamExplained@gmail.com if you have, like, a comment or an essay you want read, anything like that. But, check the links in the description for fun things and check Steven's stuff, all that. But until next time, everyone be cool.
Hey, cheers.